Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial.
And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. Your host is episode number 152. How are you?
We had quite a bit of interest in last week's podcast. We won't go through that because, boy, that was quite strange, to say the least. And hopefully, though, it did provide some education when it came to the world of penny stocks, but we're not going to talk about it much more than that. If you want to, it's probably a good idea to check out some of the comments that are on the website. There is some battling going on there, and I got to tell you something. On one hand, I think it's interesting. On the other hand, it's quite distasteful. But there is some interesting points that are put out there that I think that you'd probably be interested in checking out, because it touches on all sorts of issues there and a lot of heat on the Disciplined Investor Podcast show notes page for the last episode. And I also want to thank you once again for episode number 150. We got some incredible feedback on that, where we had the questions and answers for many of them. And thank you so much for sending those in. You know, one of the things that somebody brought up was, wouldn't it be great if we can actually do that on a regular basis, maybe even at the end of each show? What I thought we would do is, well, why not? We can, towards the end of the show, we'll bring up a question that's been asked. We have so many of them here that are continually coming in, and we will do our best to answer them and see what we can come up with. So if you do want to mail in something, or you want to, of course, call, you can do the Skype line. Just give a call in and leave a message. That's 954-828-2977, 954-828-2977. And also, if you want, you can just simply just email me, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Okay, so where are we? What's going on? I want to give you some market observations. I also want to give you a specialized technical screen that we look at that many of you have asked me for to run again. I think the last time we did it was about a month ago or so. And I want to talk to you about some of the market and issues that are surrounding the current environment and go through some of that. And then we'll loop back to what's happening. And I want to also talk about some of our recent lack of success and talk you through some of that, because I think this will be helpful to some people out there on a specific area that I think it would be helpful. But before we do any of that, I want to ask you for a favor. By the time you hear this, well, it's probably going to get really close to my birthday. And just to let you all know, no guessing, I'll be 45 years old on the 20th of March. And it's one of those, you know, kind of moments in life that you're like, okay, well, I'm kind of halfway there, I guess. You know, I guess the next thing I'm going to do is have that yearning to buy, you know, some kind of a very bright red sports car and take many trips to Vegas, many more than I would want to in unusual circumstance. But so far, so good. I have a red car, but it's more like a truck because we do a lot of trailing of a boat and a jet ski. And the Vegas trips haven't really overwhelmed me. But I wanted to ask you for a favor, and I'm really serious about this. And this is something that I think that I don't think that I'm stepping over the boundaries here. But basically, I've been working with Jason Taylor. You may know him from Miami Dolphins and from Dancing with the Stars. And Jason Taylor's a really great guy. He lives right in my town here. His office is actually right across the little path here. We have kind of these interesting pods here where our offices are. And right across, I could actually look into his window right now. And Jason and myself and a committee, we've been raising money for the Jason Taylor Foundation. In particular, we've been raising money for a, we call it the Reading Room, the Read to Succeed program, where at-risk youth are actually taken in, and they're giving a whole program on, you know, reading development, reading enrichment, and a lot of hand-holding and help. Get them off the streets and give them a great opportunity. And I'm hoping we're going to have Jason Taylor on the show just to talk about this just briefly coming up. But you know what? I'm going to ask you for a favor. We set up a donation page. We set up a little button for donations, and it's right on the website, The Disciplined Investor, and we'll put it also in the show notes for this. You know, any money that you can give really would be great. I'd really appreciate it. And you know what? Maybe if I'm not asking too much, a little birthday gesture. I'm going to be giving money as well, a substantial amount of money to the organization, plus my time. There's a couple of events coming up. But you know what? If you can give any money, $50, $25, $100, for $100, I can get a picture of Jason and myself. We're going to sign it and personalize it, send it off to you. And if anybody can give a substantial amount more, we're actually saying $1,000, we get a signed football. We'll see how that works out. But right now, we're going to start at the low end. If you can give anything, whether it's $25 or $10 or $50 or $100, I would personally be forever grateful to you and consider it maybe a great opportunity to maybe do something good for somebody. And in light of my birthday, all that presents that maybe people would send, or thank you notes, or nobody sends cash, unfortunately, maybe just redirect it to the Jason Taylor Foundation. I'm really serious about this because we're trying to raise $100,000. I won't spend too much more time on this, but I would personally be very, very grateful and very, very happy. And it would be something that I know that it will go to good use. I've watched over what's gone on there and the development, and you know, just getting some of these kids off the street into a better direction in life, I think is very, very worthwhile. So please, 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 I know that a lot of times we let things go, we hear things on these things, but you know what? I don't know. Just take 1 second. Go over to the website, click the donation tab, and give a few bucks. I would really appreciate it. I'm going to mention that over the next couple of weeks because this little thing that we're doing to raise money, I think we've gotten about $45,000 raised so far overall between the committee members, et cetera. And now I'm reaching out to my my very good friends and my audience of the Disciplined Investor Podcast and hoping that you could help out. All right, so moving along. Let's see what we have next on my list of things to talk about. Okay, so let's talk about some of the indicators that we've been watching lately. Each Monday we post a summary of all these. These are all charts that we look at, and we start off with things like the New York Stock Exchange advancing and declining, and you can see those each week. But one of the things that I found interesting was, you know, this whole dollar index and this currency index and exchange rate issues that are occurring that seem to be very, very destructive or constructive for markets, depending on where things are. You know, we saw the real devastating effect of the euro on the Greece situation that, whoop, good news. It's all over, folks. Everything is fine and fixed. Didn't you know that? The bad news is, just to touch on this for a moment, all the austerity programs and the cuts that are being done don't seem to be sitting too well with the folks in Greece. Have you noticed the amount of strikes that are going on? Now, we know they're prone to strikes there over a lot of different issues, and it's kind of a commonplace way of them, you know, reaching out and protesting, of course. But more so right now, they are just downright pissed off. These austerity measures were meant to firm up their balance sheet as best as possible for the future, to, in my opinion, do nothing more than create some type of way for the EU putting their stamp of approval on it and then raising $5 and maybe even $10 billion worth of bonds assets so that they can actually pay off the current debt that's rolling over. The same thing happened with Dubai. You know, we get Saudi Arabia standing behind them. It's called rhetoric, folks. That's what it's called. And it's called rhetoric because basically there's a lot of talk that goes on, and hopefully the fingers crossed behind the discussion is that, you know what, if we get this money, we roll it over, we buy enough time, things will be fine. I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you, how exactly it's all going to be fine when it comes to that area, in particular when it comes to the Greece, the euro, et cetera. Right now, I think we have the opportunity to take a little run. I think the dollar will continue to come down, and actually we saw this in what we talked about. The dollar is consolidating. Risk is towards a lower breakdown. We mentioned that on 3-8. And if you look at the charts that we put up, you'll see that the resistance, and you look at the trend channels and all that, it's almost a textbook case of what has gone on in the dollar market and the currency market right now. What's important to note is that every country right now is looking to keep their dollar down as much as possible to hopefully benefit their exports. Look at what happened with Japan. The yen is starting to rise again. And all of a sudden, wouldn't you know it, what do we hear? we hear that the Japanese government is looking to start to possibly do some intervention in order to bring down the yen. Now, that being the case, that would be good for exporters, and their stock market has rallied about 1.5% the last number of days ever since that was announced. But at the same time, you have to realize that this currency situation is one that is, as I see it, is a very, very important area to be looking at because it affects oil, it affects commodity plays, whether it's coal, whether it's gold, whether it's gold companies, etc. And it really needs to be something that's looked at. The other thing that I want you to look at is, and I really would encourage, I'll put a link on the site to the last week's and maybe to this week's, the New York Stock Exchange Advanced Decline Model is getting very, very overblown. Now, if you're investors like we are in that we look at every individual stock and we say, okay, that stock we like, that stock we don't like, we want to buy that stock, we're going to buy it at this point. If it crosses up above maybe a resistance point, we're going to buy it again, and so on and so on. Well, you know, you want to look at the markets as a general barometer of what's going on out there to see when things are overheated. But at the same time, you really look at that for more of a hedging strategy, right? So what we do is we buy individual positions or short individual positions, whether they're ETFs, whether they're individual stocks primarily. And, you know, if we see things getting overheated, what we'll do is maybe we'll hedge out some of that risk as best as possible. And there's a variety of ways that we do that, whether it's options or whether that's through ETFs or inverses, et cetera. But if you look at this particular chart, which I call the, if you look at this, it's a black and red chart that shows also an oscillator that we have, which is the EMA, the exponential moving average of a calculation that we do to look at how overbought or how oversold or how hot or how cold a market is. And we're reaching the up end points again. And we're seeing that over, did you know that over the last 25 trading sessions, there has not been one, more than, there has not been, I should say, a 1% drop in the markets during that period? Now, that goes into how overheated markets are. Sometimes markets need a rest. And when we're looking through all these indicators, I think that when we combine that, I'm not suggesting here that we are in the need of a rest, but I would like to see a little bit of a drawdown, just a slight one, so that we can actually get a little bit of a breath in here. There hasn't been a breath over the last, let's see, from February 16th when the market started taking off again. And this is the dynamic, and this is the way this market goes, by the way. This is how things work. Very much fits in spurts. You know, we see a drawdown. Everybody wants to buy back in. This is something we've talked about, so you can get great opportunity there. But right now, it seems to be we're at this very, very close to this point of we blew out the Fibonacci retracement from the low to the high. We're at the point of the high for the year. And what comes next? What comes next? I think right now, a little bit of a, not a pause, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, I'd like to see, not, I'm not suggesting there's going to be one, but I'd like to see one right now. I'd like to see just a little bit of a pause till we can see the next breakout. And from everything that we can see, from all the indications, for the most part, we're still kind of looking at this as a bullish environment. We've seen that over the last 6 weeks, but a little bit longer. The one area that does concern us is the bond area. Even though that has been on fire of late, it seems the bond issuance is getting a little bit out of hand, and there really needs to be a concern over how much debt is being issued when it comes to these individual companies. The good news is they're issuing it at a very low cost time. In other words, it's, you know, what are they getting? 3-4% on their bonds right now, and they could take that money, they could repay off old debt, they can actually go in and start supporting their own shares through share buyback programs, higher dividends possibly, but that's really down on the list. But what they could do with that cash is they can actually, you know, keep that and really create a much better balance sheet overall and a lower debt payment, and that will eventually increase their earnings. A little something to think about. All right, besides that, I thought I'd mention again, we had a couple of different purely technical screens that we've looked at over time, and one of the things that we like these days is a screen we call Stochastics Crossing Up, and what this is a simple, slow stochastic that is crossing up from a very, very low point below what we call an oversold point, or lower than an oversold point. And then what happens is you start seeing the break on the upside. You see the crossover and breaking through. And at the same time, what we want to see, as an example, is a stock that is exhibiting a basing pattern. We'll call it a basing pattern. Now, I think that when you look at the, you know, what this means is that in plain English, this is an oversold indicator that's starting to look like it's starting to move up, and you have a oscillator as the stochastics that are calculating, let's say, you can set them up in different ways, but a crossover of a 14-day moving average, 3-day moving average, etc. And then what you have is a basing pattern that creates a stabilization point, a point where it doesn't look like it's going much lower. Now, there's a couple of stocks that I thought were interesting to look at, but one of them I thought we would look at is this is a very much an oversold stock that had a very bad thing happen to it. This is the best way we can say this is that it's called Schweitzer Modded. They make, and again, from a purely technical standpoint, it really doesn't matter that they are, what they make and what they do. It doesn't really matter anything more than what the technical is showing us. But nonetheless, what they are is a maker of the paper for tobacco and for cigarette companies. And about 3 weeks ago, there was an announcement that there was a significant problem that they could have, a class action or a suit against them for patent infringement. And that just took the stock down from about $70, give or take, to about $40 in a matter of, I don't know, 1 or 2 days. Stock popped up over a few days, and then it drove all the way back down. And what you see here is on the chart that I'm going to put up for you, a couple of different things. We have the RSI, which is coming up and starting to move up. You have a basing pattern, which I'll draw that a little bit. We see about a 5-day basing pattern. Where the stock couldn't get below a point, even though it tried a few times to get below, it couldn't get below, so it means there's support at that level. At the same time, right at that level, talk about it as maybe the capitulation area, or maybe even say something like it's possibly the area that that buyers were stepping in, or that there were more sellers, or the sellers were exhausted. But if you look at this, you'll see that you have a point of support. A point that there was at least seemingly some layer of support. Now, whether or not there is a true patent infringement here, or whether or not anything is going to come to pass with the lawsuits, whether or not we're going to see any news on this is a different story. If there is, maybe it's been exhausted down to the point of where it was recently, down to about the $42 range. But at this point right now, the technicals are showing us this is just a technical screen only. Just a technical screen only. It's showing that there may be some opportunity here. And you do see that there's about a 10% lift off the bottom recently from about the 42 range right when the stochastic crossed. So what you have is a combination of things that we'd like to look at. We see here, again, just technically, we're not looking at anything else right now. The screening, of course, does take in consideration volume trends and a few other things to make sure that we have a stock that at least isn't a penny stock, certain pricing factors, etc. But when we look at this, you can see that basing pattern. Now, another one that you want to maybe consider looking at is actually from that list. Could be BJ's Wholesale as an example. Now, let's talk about this one. This has a little bit of a different look to it, but still you have the stochastic crossing up with a baseline. What I like about this is it's starting to cross above its 200-day moving average. Its 50-day moving average recently crossed above as well. And on top of that, what you see is that basing pattern. Look at about the $34 range, about that price line, and you'll see that we drew in a little line there. There's a lot of support on that line, and at the same time, we have the consistency of the support recently. You see the stochastic starting to turn up, and by golly, you see the stock start turning up too. Now, there's one thing that I want to mention here is that when you look at for example, on BJ's, the RSI is not so oversold at this point. It's right in the middle. And more importantly, I think what we need to look at here is that when it comes to these, what I really like to see is a confirmation of volume. Now, oftentimes when you see that volume come in, it's going to be pretty hot and that stock's going to move in one direction or the other because, when that does happen and when they've laid off for a while, it's not as beneficial if it doesn't see the volume. But in BJ's, for example, you see that gigantic move up, clearly a very high-volume sell-off back in the beginning of March after the trend was very nicely sloping higher from December through March. And then you had this situation happen here where obviously there was this gigantic sell-off, at least from a chart perspective. It's only about $2.50, about 8% on this. But again, from a technical standpoint, looking at a filtering system only than the technical, so it's kind of a combination. I've said before it's only technicals, but it's really more of like only technicals and only quantitative analysis using some screens. Now, here's the punchline of all of this. We have the opposite of this screen, which is called stochastics down. When you see that the stochastics are falling down from an over bought range way up on the top, starting to cross down. And you know what? This week, there are 500 names on that list, more than I've seen in a very, very long time. Now, what does that say? It says that a lot of stocks are overbought. That doesn't mean that they can't continue higher for some time, though. Realize that oftentimes an overbought condition or an oversold condition will continue on until some significant break, whether it comes to a news item, earnings, or there, you know, somebody steps in to change the direction on the stock. But oftentimes those positions can hold for some time. So you have to be very careful to get the trend as it's moving in the direction that you want. If you're looking at a stochastic crossing up, you want to be obviously moving long, but you want to see the long position starting to turn as you see that stochastic turning up and some support. At the same time, you want to see on something that's showing a rolling over, we'll call it, from a high point of an overbought situation. You want to see that you have multiple areas that you can't get above, and it's starting to roll over again now, and lack of support below, if possible, so that when you does start falling down, there's not all of a sudden going to be picked up out of nowhere. Again, for this type of screen, for this type of technical analysis. So consider that stochastic crossing up. I think it was an interesting thing to look at there. And we'll put the list, you know, maybe we'll put the list of just the stochastics crossing up right now on there. And I'll put the updated list on there that we have. And then at the same time, we'll look at if the list gets a little bit shorter than 500 names or so. And this is, again, pretty tall order. The stochastics crossing up only have about six or seven names on it. So, I mean, think about that. So let's talk about for a minute, as I mentioned earlier, some little sticky area that we're getting into here. You know, when we manage money, we do both on a short and a long concept. You know, both we could be short, we could be long, we could be using ETFs, options, whatever it is. And by the way, if anybody's interested, if you want to have us look at, you know, managing your money, we have two sets of accounts that we work with. I always talk about on this show the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, which is an aggressively traded strategy, $50,000 minimum. All you have to do is go to the site and check that out. Look at the 14-minute virtual tour, which we are in the process of overhauling right now. But take a look at that 14-minute virtual tour. And what you could do is, if you're interested in us managing your money in a very aggressive manner, well, go check that out. Also, for over $500,000, which is our traditional amount of money that we manage, we have our global allocations that are ETF-based and a little bit more patient. We don't do as much trading. And it's a different animal altogether, but it's based on some of the theory that we talk about on this show, still short and long. And we take the same philosophy that we have here. But, you know, lately we've been getting into this little quandary. We're getting into the quandary where we use our strategy to isolate some, not only longs, but shorts. And I'm going to focus on the shorts. And I want to talk to you about the emotions slash theory slash disappointment slash euphoria that goes into this process sometimes for investors that we notice all the time. But I want to share with you currently some experience that I had recently. We picked up a couple of different shorts, and we have a reasonable position, you know, maybe 2-4% of a portfolio, and one of them happens to be potash. We've talked about potash on DH Unplugged as something that we may want to short. One of the reasons is that the price of commodity-based food commodities have been just crashing of late. And while there is a need around the world to obviously keep the world's population fed, and that population is growing, you know, all the time, at the same time, there are different nutrients that can be used that are a lot cheaper, some better, some worse. But more importantly, when we looked at the fundamentals of potash and we looked at the fact that the pricing structure of the potash per metric ton was set, and India, a very large importer, and Russia, an exporter, and they just couldn't get their pricing right, and India was still buying and utilizing urea as a very, very cheap substance, even though it would destroy the soil bed after a period of time and create less and less of a crop per, what we'll call it, per metric area, you know, whatever area they're using, it diminishes the amount of crop that can be actually brought through that soil for time because it's not a nutrient that works as well. And a matter of fact, over time, even though it's a kind of a shot of very quick nutrient, potash and others are much better. But it was a pricing issue and has been a pricing issue. Now, on top of that, what we saw was that just recently, out of nowhere, kind of late in the trading day of the after hours, close to about 7 p.m. Eastern, that would have been last Thursday evening into the Friday session, potash comes out with an amazing announcement that they're reclassifying and reassessing their situation, and it looks like they're going to increase their EPS guidance by about 40% higher. Well, where did that come from? We're talking about totally left field here. You know, now anything can happen, and whether or not they can actually meet those goals is and those expectations is, you know, we'll see. But more importantly, you know, you have a lot of shorts that are in that position right now because, or maybe not a lot, but you have shorts in that position now that were looking at all the fundamental data that was out there, looked at the chart, and even though the chart was showing a little bit of a pattern that could possibly break out from all the information that we saw, the general trend, and from the fact that there was significant resistance above and it was breaking down at this point, it seemed, even though we could chart whatever you want to chart on there, a variety of different patterns, it did seem when you tie out the technical data with the fundamental data and the announcements they had, as well as the information from around the world on agriculture, etc., that would probably not be the case. Well, lo and behold, they come out with this extraordinary release. Like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Potash, the company, and maybe the others, is Potash of Saskatchewan, POT is a symbol, has all of a sudden, maybe miraculously in the last few weeks, gotten some extraordinary order that is going to solve all their problems. I don't know. Bottom line is, very disappointing from an investment standpoint. And what do you do in those circumstances? And this is what I want to share with you. Well, the bottom line is, you know, there's a lot of pride of a lot of times when it comes to investing. But more importantly, you have to use logic. You have to use discipline. We talk about that all the time. And right now, we had to take our losses and kind of run away with our tails between our legs on that position and say, you know what, that did not work out so well. Same thing happened this week or last week with Skechers. You know, Skechers, we looked at all the analysis, we looked at the inventory numbers, we looked at the overall trend. Yes, it was kind of seeing a little bit of an uptrend here, but then again, so was the entire market. More importantly, though, there's been a lot of research that we saw, some very well-respected people that talked about their new shape-up. And without getting into all the gory detail about this, we took a position in Skechers. Well, lo and behold, that next day, it wasn't a technical break. No. It was Cramer. Jim Cramer went berserk, saying that, you know, Skechers is just fantastic, just amazing. They're going to blow out. You got to just, you know, buy into this. And this is a couple of days after we bought the stock. And again, we have our sell disciplines or cover disciplines when it comes to shorts, and we were taken out of it. Now, remember something. Here's the point of this market. The market of last year has been very, very kind to shorts in a downtrend, but you have to get in there and get out of there very fast. Even though that downtrend may persist for some time, it would seem to us that, you know, what we've learned here and then learned again this week, once again, is if you have a profit on a short, 4, 5, 6%, take it, take some off the table, because they oftentimes you find that miraculously there's a hand that helps these positions out, and you need to be very careful, especially when it comes to individual positions. Defense of a position is much more likely than it is to see the other side of it, which would be that a stock is moving up. People would say, oh, you know what? We think it got out of control. Take Netflix, for example. Another example of a short position. We were long the position, made a nice piece of money, went short, lost about 6 or 7% or 8% on that position recently. The last three or four shorts have just not worked out at all. But one of the things about Netflix was that we had right after we shorted it, it just so happened we had, I think, three or four major brokerages that actually came out and they said that Netflix was a clear sell because there was a lot of different reasons. One of them was the Walmart buy and the streaming. One of the reasons was that the competition. The other reason was there's no way they thought that Netflix would be able to meet the needs at this point. They would have to grow their business by about 300% in subscribership in order to get the levels of ratios back in order. So you look at all these different things, not to mention that came up on our screen as a short candidate, even though it moved up so dramatically. The trend was down, even though the market was doing well. And what happened? What happened was that two miners came out defending the name after it started dropping. Two minor brokerages obviously started pumping money into it to break out the shorts. The shorts went into a they got a bit squeezed there. And this is what's happening every single time right now. Shorts are much more concerned about, you know, saving money right now, whereas longs are thinking, hey, you know what? We can just break these shorts down almost on every occasion. So right now, the shorting opportunity, I would say, until we see a dramatic market downturn without a liquidity going in, volume that sells off in a very, very high manner, that's when you want to look at this area again. And I must tell you, with 500 stocks on the stochastic crossing down as an example, with the trend moving up as high as it is, with the oscillators moving into this kind of area, with 25 days of not more than 1% down, I question how long we could see before we do see a significant downturn of 1% or so, 2%, just to take some of this out. Question is, what do you do with it? Because there is just so many people that right now want to get into the market when it drops. And this is precisely what happened in the middle of this year, 2010, when we saw the February 16th turnaround and it move up dramatically. And that's all of a sudden when you have to turn on a dime right now, because the trend is, yes, it's up, but even if the trend moves down and you see a big sell-off, as you did due to the Greece situation, due to Dubai, due to the Chinese maybe increasing rates, due to the fear that the Fed was going to reduce rates, everybody is on alert, from governments to investors, and realizing that there is a hand that is being played in here. And I'm not saying plunge protection team. I'm just saying the general concept of a hand in here that is holding things up very nicely. So with that in mind, you know, this is kind of how we deal with it. We say, okay, you know what? We can, you know, live another day by getting out of the position, entering it if it makes sense again. Don't be afraid to re-enter the position. That's where most people will fall down. Re-enter the position if it makes sense, and even at a higher level on a short or a long for that matter, if it makes sense to do so. But a lot of times people are like, well, I made money in that. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm going to take my profit and move on, not trade that position, not invest in that position. I'm going to not definitely short that position. But you have to be able to recognize that stocks and markets move up and down. It's a simple process. You're not always going to get it right. No question about that. We're not always going to get it right. Nobody will. But you know what? What you want to do is make sure that at least you have the ability to be in when it's appropriate. And what we do for that is, and I want to share something with you, is we use a step-based process sometimes to enter in positions. So as an example, let's say that we want to have, as an example, a 5% position in a portfolio for any stock, you know, ABC stock. Well, if we have a high conviction, we may say, well, we're going to buy a 2% position initially, and if it breaches the next resistance points, we're going to, you know, on the upside, we're going to buy more. If it stays again above its moving averages and it stays above trend, well, maybe we'll buy a little bit more if it reaches this price. So until we get it up to the price that we want it to be. Now, you may miss a little bit on the upside there. But on the other hand, if the stock moves against you, you're only out 2% on a 2% position. This way, you could really manage your risk a lot better. And as the stock increases in size of your portfolio, so it becomes the 5% position that you want it to be, if in fact it starts moving against you again, well, what you can do is very simple. You just take some off the table. And from there, what you do is you then can have the opportunity to adjust the position, add to it, et cetera, over time, if it moves with you. And as I always say, if the stock is giving us love, we're going to take that love and ride with it. If it's not giving us love, we're going to cut it and move on. So I think that's some strategy that you can use right there, and something that you can consider using for your benefit. So I also want to talk about some of the recent economic indicators that came out here and talk to you a little bit about that. They've been kind of mixed, but towards the, I would say, the better. There's some disturbing factors in the market right now. For example, oil, we're going to talk about in a second. But when we look at some of the sentiment indicators, the retail and the retailers, how they're doing, I'm going to give you a stock that I think is really interesting to look at, or at least an area, something that has been doing very well, dropped off, then came back, at least to consider, just something to look at. And also I want to talk about some of the overall market indicators, and I think it's important. We talked about the stochastic subs and the amount of ones that are in that area. We also talk about the trend, for example, and sentiment. But I think that the last bit of indicators that we saw were pretty good. Generally speaking, were pretty good. So what we did was we created all the indicators, all the economic indicators and releases that you need to know and that we've been looking at since the beginning of this month, since the beginning of March. And we actually have a link to that in the show notes, and we'll give you all this. I want to talk about that, some of this, though, and some of the highlighted ones that we thought were kind of interesting. Well, first of all, if you go back to the beginning of March, you look at the fact that, you know, generally speaking, the confidence has been questionable. Domestic vehicle sales were much better than we thought they were going to be. At the same time, when you look at the ADP employment numbers, they were right on expectations, but again, getting better. The Fed's Beige Book talked about how, this is on about the 3rd of March, talked about how most regions were seeing a little bit of an uptick, very little bit of an uptick when it came to expansion. Still, unemployment is raining havoc and just all sorts of problems in the various regions. Many regions have seen either a downtick or a stabilization. which is code for nothing. Of course, remember that. You know, if they say stabilization, it means nothing's happening. No growth, maybe a little bit worse, but not so bad. But the initial claims that we've been seeing on Thursdays at 8:30 in the morning have been stubbornly, very stubbornly staying over the 450 mark. As a matter of fact, in the beginning of this month, we saw a 470 print, and then we saw actually a 460 print this week. And that's not really a good thing because there really isn't the hiring going on, and there is a continuation of firing. I mean, looking at over 400,000 people filing for initial claims on a weekly basis is pretty scary stuff. But at the same time, we all scratch our head and say, wait a minute, unemployment should be at least going up, or at the same time, maybe it would be a little bit higher than we're seeing it now. A lot of people have been predicting that we see about 11% unemployment rate by the end of 2010. Well, we're at a 9.7, and in fact, many of the analysts and economists that surveyed this said that we'd be at a 9.8 at this point. And don't forget, this is down a bit. Well, we also saw a disappointing number in non-farm payrolls, down 68,000. Pardon me. It was a good number. The survey said that we're expecting about 68,000, and there's been a lot of concern over the snow and the inability for people to really get jobs, and then they even ramp that into the retail numbers. But when we look at the change in non-farm payrolls, we saw only 36,000 of individuals that were at this time laid off more, and they thinking that maybe next time, next month, in the first week of the month on the Friday, we are going to see an actual private a positive print for the NFP number. Now, here's what's interesting. With all of the initial claims, this is what people, I think, get caught up on and confused about. With all the initial claims that we see in the 450, 470, 480 mark, how is it that we're seeing non-farm payrolls actually get better? Well, you have to remember something. We're talking about initial claims, first-time claims, versus people that are unemployed and going back to work. There's different numbers, different statistical series that we're looking at here, and you have to remember that when we look at that, where we see a non-farm payrolls down 36,000, and we see the unemployment rate at 9.7. Just because we see one number on the same day does not necessarily mean that it's related to the same series. In fact, those two I just mentioned, the change in non-farm payrolls and the unemployment rate, are two separate series. What was also very, very interesting right about the same time that came out was that we saw that the average annual earnings on a month-on-month basis for all employees actually stabilized to the plus side, and at the same time, on a year-over-year basis, it grew. The average hourly work week for all employees also moved up higher. And that right there, my folks, is talking about productivity. When we look at productivity and we look at the productivity numbers for non-farm productivity that was released on 3-4, and we see it's at 6.9%, expected to be 6.3, prior was at 6.2, that's an incredible thing to consider. Productivity really is all about, you know, how much are we squeezing out of each individual employee in order to get as much as we can out of them. We look at the things like capacity utilization, and we look at, you know, the productivity. And what we're finding is that really less people are needed to run the same business that was needed before. Now, there's different kinds of businesses. There's service businesses. There's manufacturing businesses. When you look at the service business, well, of course, you can't really cut down on the employees that much and that substantially because they have to service the end customer. But in the manufacturing area, if we can have robotics, technology, and we've talked about this many, many times, the whole idea of consumption, and really this whole cannibalistic approach that companies are taking to cutting employees, whittling down the staff, whittling down costs overall, because they have to ensure they are keeping not only their stock price up, but their company viable. Now, as we see the average average hourly earnings increase, and we see the average, more importantly, the weekly hours increase, hiring staying somewhat subdued, and at the same time, initial claims being high, it points to the fact that productivity is very high, which will yield for a better bottom line to the company for a time. What happens, though, when that company no longer can sell their product because they don't have people that are willing to buy it because people aren't working? And this whole jobless recovery can happen in a world where robotics, technology, engineering, and cost cuts in the nature of making sure that the bottom line is protected can work. But in the real world, when you kind of come up for air for a second, we need to have gainful employment, people making money. That's the only way that the consumption can continue. Sure, people need to eat. They need a house. You know, they need the basic fundamentals and things that are required to live on. But at the same time, companies right now are trying to find out what that fulcrum point is. What is that? At what level can they cut back to a point that still keeps them profitable while not having to bring people back? And what we're seeing right now is the continuation of the inventory restocking cycle, because we saw that wholesale inventories are actually drawing down a little bit when the survey thought they'd be up. That was released on the 10th of March. And on top of that, we're seeing that retail sales have done well in spite of the fact that there was this horrible, horrible month of snow and weather that was just incredible throughout the entire United States, more focused on the Midwest, of course, northern and northeast part of the country. But still, there was really concern that we would see a very big flop on retail sales. Well, the advanced retail sales were actually released, and that was a plus 0.3%. Prior was a plus 0.5, slightly revised down. But the survey, the economists, who have been very wrong for a very long period of time, and by the way, if you have an economist that you think is either great or someone we should interview, let me know. Because we talked to a few of them here, but most of them in total, when we look at the consensus, have been so far off when it comes to any of these numbers, it's not even funny. But when we look at the advanced retail sales and we look at it considering without automobiles, we saw a 0.8% print, almost a 1% print when the survey economists, everybody thought it was going to be a tough month, only up 0.1. Now, there's two things that happen with that. The first thing that happens is everybody gets all excited about retail at all. Then they start scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, is our economy overheating? And what happens is that maybe they start pulling back on the market, thinking that, you know what, there is going to be a rate hike. That's what's been happening with this market. As long as things aren't good, the realization is there'll be very easy money, low cost, the ability for the continuation of quantitative easing, the ability for bailouts, the ability to just continue and spend and spend and spend, like we saw last week with the $150 billion jobs bill that just snuck in there again, right in between the financial reform and the healthcare reform that's going on. Right in there snuck a $150 billion jobs bill that extends the actual unemployment claim payment that can be made, also giving tax cuts and credits to businesses for hiring. So we come in with a hot number, and if you look at the ex auto and gas, we even came with a hotter number of up 0.9%. But right after, University of Michigan comes out with a preliminary number of 74 from last time, 74 before, and now it's 72.5. Drops down. And it's been continuing to drop down. Confidence, generally, of the current state of affairs right now has been good. But the forward confidence has been the one that's been a problem. So that means people are spending money right now, but they're still being kind of cautious. They're not just throwing it out there and getting crazy with it. But at the same time, we look at the realization that expansion is here. People are feeling a lot better about what's going on right now, possibly thinking that could be a double dip if we don't get this employment situation under wraps. But at the same time, there is some good numbers, generally speaking. Now, the way we like to look at economics and the numbers that come out is two ways. And I think this is why I'm providing you with this narrative right now and why I'm providing you with the information on the website in the show notes. Because what we're doing is the way you construct a thesis moving forward is not only from looking at stocks and markets, etc., and trends, But you also want to look at, you know, what's happening bigger picture, because the bigger picture, the economics, is what keeps you out of the big trouble if things start getting really hairy. Because if you think about it, what really stopped you from investing back in September of 2008 or a little bit before that? It wasn't the market, because the market was doing just fine. It was the economics were getting very soft. Unemployment was rising. There was all sorts of signals out there. Now, that doesn't always keep you safe or get you in. But again, it's another piece to the puzzle that I think it's important to use as a disciplined investor. You want to make sure that you're using all the tools that are, you know, available to you. And on top of that, we like to build these narratives that go over time. So we look at, for example, you know, back the last 2.5-3 weeks, what's gone on with the latest set of economics compared to what they were. Then you can use graphs, and that's what we do. We chart a lot of this every day. And by the way, if you want to get the updates on a daily basis of what we do and what we talk about, it's very simple. All you have to do is sign up for Twitter, and then it gives you all the information as it's coming up. You want to find out and know when the podcast is released? Well, it'll Twitter you immediately the second that that happens. Same thing on Facebook. So just follow me at Twitter. It's Andrew Horowitz, or just sign up for me and befriend me, become a friend of mine on Facebook. Either one works, and you get the information instantly, or you can check at the site at The Disciplined Investor, of course, whenever you want. But the other thing is that we build these narratives that look back at what's happened and build what we see is happening. Just like I said, talk through it, discuss the revisions, the surveys, the actuals, the expectations, what period they're talking about, how things are changing, and that can help you out. We put the actual last few weeks of economics releases that we look at with all the information we discussed just now in terms of the various periods. We write about this for our clients on a quarterly basis. We usually distribute this. We don't. We keep it for our clients right now. But we write a narrative like this of what's happened and what we believe is going to happen, looking at the trends from an economic standpoint, try to pinpoint how that may affect equities and the basic sentiment, as well as employment and the overall corporate earnings out the next quarter or so. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, well, last thing, was the whole idea of casual dining restaurants. You know, there's a lot of stocks out there that fit this area. We're not talking about the McDonald's, not talking about Burger King, even though those could be put into that area. But what we're talking about are things like Cheesecake Factory, Chipotle, or however you pronounce that. We're talking about the Applebee's, the Fridays. Conceptually, those companies, some of them are owned by Dine Equity, maybe like the Olive Garden, and dare I say, the Red Lobster. I have yet to meet anybody that likes it, but maybe I'm wrong. I used to hate the Olive Garden. I mean, with a passion. Not so bad. I went recently. I think it's okay. A little salad, a little soup, you know, get a little of that bread. It works. Even actually, I had one of their, somebody at my table had the pasta dish. I said, okay, I'm going to taste this, even though I know I'm going to regret it. And I thought it was pretty good. Nonetheless, these are the type of companies I want to share with you a little insight, a little bit of the world of casual dining that could be very interesting for you to look at. And this was forced upon them, but at the same time, it was in the process of re-engineering and engineering the entire business plan for some time. But it was forced upon them very, very quickly after, let's say, 2007, 2008, where things really went to hell in a handbasket. So here's what happens. Let's talk about, let's say, a hypothetical company, whether it's Cheesecake, which we do own, whether it's one of the other dining establishments, mid-level we're talking about here. Think about this for a second. You have a company that has customers that come in, and each different location they come in, and they may have different wants and desires and different tastes, etc. But you have a centralized database. That's the core of what I'm talking about here. You have a centralized database to deal with marketing, analysis of trends, understanding of inventory management and hiring, staffing, and also the likes and dislikes of the customer. And how do you know this? Well, you know what's happening on their checks. You know what they like. You know what they're buying in this location. So maybe over in southern New Jersey, they're buying much more steak. And over in Tennessee, they're buying a lot more chicken. Maybe over in California, they're buying a lot more, they're drinking a lot more Jack Daniels and whiskeys and bourbons. And maybe in New York, they're drinking a lot more vodkas. Down in Florida, we got the mojitos. Okay? So, you know, maybe there's all these trends that are going on. A traditional restaurant, you know, in the old days would have the information. They know what they would want. They'd have a basic understanding of what the trend was of Friday nights, Saturday nights, buying, etc. But could you imagine just for a moment, if you had the ability
to statistically analyze all of this data on an ongoing basis, thereby knowing that this particular location maybe doesn't have a great Tuesday and Wednesday night. Don't bring in people to work that shift, and the bar is more crowded, so maybe bring another bartender, but cut down on service overall. Maybe this location over here is a much bigger eater of steaks, and that's a high-margin product for us. And you know what we want to do is, that's great. We're going to make sure that the ordering works out exactly as we need, but cut down on chicken, cut down on fish, cut down on the salads, etc. But this location over here, for example, maybe they're in Wyoming. They're eating a lot more chicken. We want them to eat more, maybe not in Wyoming, but they eat a lot more chicken. We want to really bring up the higher margin level of buying them, bringing them a steak. So let's have some steak specials at that particular location. And again, depending on how they're taught to upsell and how they're according to selling the product, they can really manipulate and work in a good way the entire process and the inventory management of their products, whether it's from paper and from silverware to all the way from the food itself, so that they can have less spoilage, less waste, and really keep their expenses very, very, very tight. Now, you could take this to an extreme, and if you think about that, wow, that is some pretty interesting process that can happen that an individual or a small company that doesn't have the ability to have such a big audience or customer base to analyze, they can't have that. The advantage right now, it's kind of like the old days where you'd have on the corner a little hardware store here or a stationery store there, and all of a sudden came in Home Depot, all of a sudden came in Office Depot, Office Max, Staples, and these guys put the rest of them out of business. Now, it's not exactly the same, but very similar, where the economy of scale that you have to work with these companies and the ability to statistically analyze everything that goes on is just fantastic. This is where some of the benefits come into some of these chains, some of these dining establishments. Now, you have to be careful. There are times that even with the best analysis, even with the best understanding, people just still don't come in. Maybe it's because of a menu item. Maybe it's because of a trend of employment. Maybe it's because, you know, just there is weather issues. So you have to look at that. Recently, there was a piece that we read that is really calling for the weather issues to be a big concern in the next quarterly returns and the earnings that are coming out for many of these companies. The question is, how well did they prepare and plan? How well did they cut their expenses, their employee overhead? How well did they take in consideration the actual amount of food inventory that they had to really cut it back to a level that was the best for them and to make sure that they had their earnings in the best area? Anyway, a little, as I would say, food for thought, a little bit of a stock ideas that you may want to look into the casual dining as it play over time. And look at the ones that have the greatest ability to understand the statistical analysis and understanding of what they're doing overall. The bigger, the better, per se. But more so, the more specialized, the better. I think that would be it. So we talked about a lot today. I wanted to just address one more point here. We got a question that came in. This came in from, I talked to you, we're going to try to do this on the show. If you have a question, just email me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. This comes in from Vic Capron, and he said, Andrew, could you explain on your next podcast how economies as small as Iceland and Greece are causing such turmoil in the U.S. markets? I would think that the uncertainty would lead to foreign investors to dump money into our markets and into U.S. stocks. Mr. Market is overreacting, no? Ah, that's a good question. That's a really good question, because between Greece and Dubai and all the other possible things that are coming to fore right now, how could this be? How could Iceland be affecting us so badly when this happened? Is it an overreaction? Well, it's not an overreaction if, in fact, it leads to default. Many banks, many of our system, many of people may have invested in there. Many of the areas of Iceland also are using our products and buying our products. And if you have a default of an entire country, it could be a real negative impact. As a prime example would be the devaluation of the currency in Venezuela recently. When we look at companies out there, there was a lot of announcements from, let's say, Caterpillar, Coca-Cola, and a few others that said that this is going to hurt their earnings by about 4 cents, 3 cents, 5 cents, 10 cents, whatever it may be. And when you look at these different countries and what goes on there and the pain that they're feeling, it does hurt our multinationals. It could hurt our banks. It could hurt investors, and it could have a much greater meaning than what it is. Right now, investors overreacted. Why? Because basically, nobody's going to fail. I talk to my friend Frank Herzog all the time. Nothing fails. Even if it does fail, it seems to still trade on the markets and still has a symbol, and it's the biggest joke in the world. It's the joke is on us. The failure, even though it doesn't fail, is going to be taken out of your and my pocket in the form of taxes. I was just speaking to somebody today. We were talking about the Jackson healthcare system down here in Florida. It is a disaster. $200 million in the hole. They asked the federal area, the state of Florida for some money. They said no, they're not helping bail them out. At the same time, they're now just going to start looking at their own backyard to see maybe if Dade County can maybe issue some bonds, help them out, give them some deferral. But what's going to happen if they fail? If they fail and they go under, it's just going to cost us all more money. It's going to cost us money either way. So why let them fail and then have to clean up the mess? You know what? Just shove money in and then we'll have to pay taxes. Either way, it's going to cost us. One will create a panic. One will create higher unemployment. And the other way is just going to just make us all miserable and cost a lot more for us. So the overreaction right now is dramatic initially, especially for some of the things that are first timers. Iceland was a first time issue. Greece was a first time issue for Europe. Dubai for the Middle Eastern area. But at the same time, Greece, I think, holds a much bigger problem because it speaks right to the fragility of the euro and what happens if a country inside the eurozone that is a part of the euro is going, the single currency euro will break down. What will happen there? Right now, we saw an incredible rise of the euro over the last week or so. Once everybody says, oh, everything's fine in Greece. Is everything fine? The austerity measures are causing major problems. I mean, we've talked about this. I just don't buy it. I think that was great. And it was, say, it's lipstick on a pig, or better said, it's a beautiful layer of chocolate over a big pile of dog poop. That's the bottom line. And the fact of the matter is that right now, as long as that can last, everybody will be happy until the next shoe falls, whatever that is. Then there'll be panic. Will it create a buying opportunity? There will be buying opportunities. Yes. The question is, as always, you don't want to be the last person holding the bag. When the real crap hits the fan and when it can't be covered up or at least lipsticked any further, or chocolated, chocolate the icing on the top. And I think that you have to consider the fact that, the first few will be shocking. The next few people will just blow off and not care about. But then all of a sudden we'll get, if it continues, it'll become a very concerning factor. And then the real pain comes. Now, we're not saying that's going to get there, but the possibility, you need to be on your toes for that. Thanks, Vic, for asking that question. If you do have any questions, clearly just Skype in at 954-828-2977. Leave your message, and we'll try to get a book, The Disciplined Investor, off to you with a quick little signature personalization to you. And if you do write, please, or if you call, please put your address and all that information in there. Otherwise, we're going to have to track you down. And finally, if you haven't gotten a copy, what are you waiting for? Go over to Amazon. It's like 15 or 16 bucks. The Disciplined Investor Essential Strategies for Success. I think you'll be very happy that you did some good things in there. If nothing else, you pick up one little nugget. It's worth 15 bucks, isn't it, folks? Go pick up a copy. And with that, we're going to end. We have some great guests coming up next week and the week after. I don't have them written down right in front of me. I know they were great guests, though, because I was just talking to somebody about the booking of them. So, nonetheless, we're also going to be booking some people from the ECRI. We have a call-out to Robert Reich again. Some people had asked for them. Frank Herzog, of course, will be coming back shortly. And next week, we're also going to talk about some of the numbers that are coming out right now and what to look for in some of the great opportunities that we're seeing inside some of the sectors. We'll talk about that. Leave it a little bit vague, a little bit of a teaser, a little bit of a carrot in front of you. Until next week, I hope and wish that you have a wonderful week. Make sure to tune in to DH Unplugged and The Winning Investor. And don't forget, please don't forget, by the time it's my birthday, we want to raise all that money. Please, please, please donate some money to the Jason Taylor Foundation, to the Reading Room, for the Read to Succeed initiative. All you have to do is go to the Disciplined Investor, click that donate button, and you're off and running. And I really do, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate all you listening, spending time, your friendship. And of course, now I'm going to thank you for your donation. Speak to you soon. Have a great and a profitable week. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.